same excuse as the rabbi. I found my rabbi.
Are you done?
You should put that else in case this doesn't work. So it's only half full. I can just charge it. So. If mine works, I'll post it already tonight.
Okay.
If not, then I'll. Yeah. Okay. Good evening to everybody. First, just Rosh Hashanah Rav Orlean. Thank you to Rav Orlean and Rav Naftali Lavenda for helping to arrange this. And it was really Naftali's idea to begin with. And it's a great idea to try to attach a review series of Hilchos Nida to the Daf Yomi cycle of Maseches Nida. A couple years ago, we did a little review during the Shovim series, which is a little bit earlier in the year, but this year we didn't have a chance to do it. So this is a great opportunity to be able to review the Halachos of Nida, not in an elaborate fashion, but at least in a brief fashion, with the opportunity to review and hopefully to remind ourselves and to gain some knowledge about some of the aspects. And more than what we learn, and again, we can't obviously get to every single detail, at least give you a reminder as to which types of things that come up you'll remember to be able to ask. And yeah, I remember this is a question, let's go ask a Shaila. Okay, the point is not to only give you bottom line halacha, it's to remind you or to give us the tools to remember when is an appropriate time to ask a Shaila, either through yourself or through your wife, and when is something which is very, very, very clear cut, and you can basically know what the halacha is beforehand. In terms of the order of this, the series of shiurim over the next couple of weeks, so I think if it was you posted it on the groups, Naftali, so you can just look on the groups. We're going through topics, obviously. It's not exactly in chronological order of the Nida cycle, but it's I guess a rough parallel to certain aspects of the cycle. Just to give a brief introduction before we go into the more detailed aspects of the halachos for tonight, so just one little hashkafa point, and then. And in source number two here, you'll see the overview of the cycle. Just go through it very, very, very quickly. Does everyone have a sheet? Everyone has a sheet or can share? Okay. Everyone has a sheet? Yeah. Okay, can I just by a show of hands, who here is actually learning Maseches Nida with the Daf Yomi cycle now? Can you just raise your hand so I have some idea of what's going on here? Okay, so we have at least about 60% of you are doing it, and the other 40% are not. Okay, so I'll make it hopefully as of yet. No, that was obvious. As of yet. Like, you know, the not yet religious Jew that we hope one day soon will be, you know, so everybody should aspire to. I shouldn't say that. If you want to aspire to the Daf Yomi cycle, you should be able to aspire to the Daf Yomi cycle. If it's not for you.
but even for those not learning Daf Yomi, this is still good.
100%. You'll be able to follow perfectly well, even if you're not. And basically, to be honest, most of these Gemaras are going to be at the very end of Maseches Nida. So even if you're learning Daf Yomi, you won't get to these Gemaras for another couple of weeks. Okay. Source number one, just again a little bit of a hashkafic background to this, which may mean something to some of you, maybe not, but I figured I'd throw it out there anyway if you're not familiar with it. The Gemara here in Nida on Daf Lamed Aleph says the following. Tanya, Hayar Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say, Yivnei Amra Torah Nida L'Shiva. Why did the Torah say that a Nida should be separated from her husband for 7 days? So the Gemara answers, Yivnei Shirogil Ba V'Ketzba. Because the Torah says that we're concerned that maybe a husband will be too familiar, too accustomed to being with his wife, V'Ketzba, and it'll just get, it'll be enough for him. It's too much, meaning if you have something that you're able to do all the time without any sort of interruptions or separations, it becomes something which is not really special or a unique experience anymore. That's, I guess, to put it lightly. So therefore, Rabbi Meir says, Amra Torah, the Torah says, Tei Tameh Shivas Yamim, that the woman should be Tameh, she should be impure for 7 days, that she cannot have relations with her husband and come close to her husband. Kedesh Tei Chaviva Al Bala Kishas Knisas Al Chupas, that she should be beloved to her husband the same way that she was, that they were together at the time when they entered the marriage. When they went into the chuppah, they were, you know, we would call it a lovey-dovey, okay, husband and wife are googly-eyed. They're, obviously, it's a very special time when for the first time they're getting together and getting married. They can touch each other for the first time and have certain experiences that were unavailable before. So the Torah says this is exactly what we're trying to accomplish, at least on a hashkafic level, with the time period of Nida as well, so that you don't have a constant period that you can always get together and be together. We have interruptions in between so that you're able to appreciate what you have during the cycle, the parts of the cycle where you are together, even more so. Now, obviously, it's true that today We have to wait a little bit more than 7 days, meaning the Gemara is working on a Doraisa level, which I decided, and maybe Orlean will discuss this, I decided for my Shurim that I'm not going to be discussing the period of Nida and Zava just because it takes too long and we don't have enough time to really get into it. But again, according to the Torah, it's important to note that the basic Nida cycle, according to the Torah, is only 7 days. Okay, it's only 7 days. You don't have to do any checkings, any bedikas. There's no such thing as Shiva Nakiyam during the time period, according to the Torah. You don't have to actually wait 7 clean days. Simply, you wait 7 days. At the end of the 7 days, if you're... Second. Right, okay. The only thing you have to do is one hefsek tara. Okay, one check to make sure that she's clean. And after 7 days, as long as she's found to be clean after 7 days, then she can go to the mikvah and be tahor. Today, as we'll see over the next couple of weeks, that is not the case. Today we have to wait 5 days plus 7 days. We have to do Shiva Nakiyam, that every day she's supposed to be clean during the 7 clean days, which is not true according to the Torah. Bottom line, it takes a little bit longer today to become Tahor than it did at the time of the Torah. So what you need to substitute is, why did Chazal say that the Nidas cannot be with her husband for roughly 12 days, 13 days, however much it comes out to be, as opposed to 7 days? But the same concept can still apply. Okay? It's a little bit longer, but the concept, of waiting and having that anticipation and realizing what you're missing is certainly true today as well, and I think it's something to appreciate when we look at the time period, the cycle of Hilchos Nida from a Hashkafic point, that there's something there to appreciate. Okay. Just in terms of the cycle, just so everybody's clear what's going on here with the Nida cycle. So again, I just put 6 or 7, outline points here just to understand what everything is. Number one, the first step of becoming a Nida is that the woman becomes a Nida. Okay, she becomes a Nida, as we'll discuss shortly, through Hargasha, which we'll define in just a minute. Basically, again, she has her monthly menstrual cycle. That's when she becomes a Nida. During the time period when she's a Nida, number two, we have certain harchakos, we have certain things that distance the husband and the wife from each other that they can't do, things which involve affection to one another and other ways of methods of contact, even some that are indirect, which are prohibited. That we'll get to, probably in 2 weeks. I don't remember. It's 1 or 2 weeks, but we'll get to that, not tonight, in a couple weeks. So our harchakos again apply during the entire period of Nida when the husband and the wife are prohibited to be together. Number three is the 5 days. Today we'll discuss this also in a couple of weeks. We start out with 5 days from the day that she becomes a Nida. So there are 5 days that she has to, we assume usually the actual flow of blood lasts for roughly 5 days. It could be a little more, a little less, but halachically, again, we'll get to this. There have to be at least 5 days in most normal situations, could be more, that she can't do anything. After that, then number four, after the 5 days, then at least the possibility begins that perhaps she can do a hefsek tara. Hefsek tara, of course, is the examination, the thorough examination that she undergoes to see whether she has stopped bleeding. Okay, and that can be done. Again, there are exceptions, and we'll talk about this in a couple of weeks, but generally, after the 5 days, or at the end of the 5 days, she can begin to try her examination. If the hefsek is clean, there's no blood, then she can move on to step number five in this outline here, which is the Shiva Nakiyam. If she's not clean, then she has to wait another day in order to try again. Okay, again, all these points we will discuss more in detail. I'm just giving you a brief outline for now, so don't really ask any questions on this at this point. Number five, again, the Shiva Nakiyam, once the hefsek has become clean, so then the next day begins her 7 days of being clean, meaning that according to Chazal, again, we're not going to get into the details now, but according to Chazal, she has to count 7 days that she's clean every single day. Okay, she can't see blood on any of those days. During those 7 days, every day, ideally, she should be doing at least one, preferably two, bedikas, examinations on each day to make sure that she is clean. The details behind that and when the exceptions will be, we'll discuss, but not tonight. That is those 7 days. Each have to be clean. Assuming she gets through the 7 days and coming out clean, so the next step would be to do tevila. If she doesn't get through it, meaning if on any given day either one of the vedikas does not come out clean, or perhaps she sees a kesem, she sees a stain, that way we'll discuss a little bit in a few minutes. She sees a stain which may be tame, and again we'll discuss this, but if the stain is indeed tame, and we'll have to see the rules of when it is and when it's not, if it is, then she's got to start all over again. Okay, she's got to start from do another hefsek tahara, and then start the Shiva Nakiyam once again and go through the 7 days another time until the entire period of 7 days comes out clean. Again, that's overall general points with obviously exceptions, but that's the general rule. If she is indeed clean for 7 days, so then the night after the seventh day, So then that's the night of Tevila, that's the night that she goes to the mikvah in a regular situation. Obviously, there will be exceptions to that rule as well. If something goes wrong and she can't, and that will, I think Rav Orleans is giving that shir in a couple of weeks, discuss exactly how that works in unusual situations. But the normal rule is that she should be going to the mikvah the night after the Shiva Nikim. And number seven, that'll also be in a couple of weeks. That's the concept of Veses, which is basically the concept that for the next cycle, we already expect that the period may come at a certain time, depending on when it came previous months. And that has to be discussed exactly how to figure that out, but there will be certain days based on previous cycles that we would say that we expect maybe her period will begin that day or that night, and therefore that day they may have to abstain from relations and perhaps from other aspects of closeness as well. Again, that we'll get to in a couple of weeks. Okay, any very general questions about the cycle here? Again, all the details we'll talk about at some point, but overall, is everybody more or less comfortable? You're familiar with the cycle already from before, pretty much on the same page. Okay, very good. So the rest of the shiur tonight, we'll spend talking about Hargasha, Ksamim, and what I wrote on the top, asking Shilas to the Rav. Okay? Let's start with Hargasha. What exactly is Hargasha? Okay, this one, for those of you who have started Daf Yomi, you started last week, right? Okay, so this one, we have at least one Mara Makomi that you may have seen already. Okay, the rest of them you probably won't have seen, at least one you've seen already. There's a concept that we have to have a hargasha, that a woman has to have a hargasha in order for her to actually become tameh as a nida. What exactly is this hargasha and where is it from? So let's start, we'll jump here for a second to source number four, and then we'll go back to number three. The Gemara says in source number four, this is on Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, which we'll get to, those of you Daf Yomi learners will get to in a couple weeks. So again, there are many, of course, that mention this concept of this hargasha. I just gave you one famous one here. Amar Shmuel, Bad Kakarka Olam V'yashva Aleha, Umata dam aleha tahora. Hey, if she checks the ground underneath her, again, the expression of karka olam is an interesting one. We're not going to go into it now. But she checks the ground underneath her. Let's assume that it's clean beforehand. She sits on the ground, and then afterwards she finds blood on the ground. So the halacha is she's tahora. She's not tameh. Why not? Shenamar bivisara achatargish bivisara. Because the Torah says that blood should be bivisara in her flesh, which the Gemara with Shmuel interprets to mean that in order to become tameh, she has to feel a sensation. Targish, from the word hargasha, modern Hebrew as well, she has to feel a sensation, bivsara, in her flesh. Okay, that's the concept of Shmuel here, which again is which is confirmed in the halacha as well, that the woman has to have a hargasha, some sort of sensation, in order to become tummy. What exactly is the sensation? So that's not so clear. Okay. If you look at source number three, so the Gemara has, again, an interesting line here, which some of you have seen already, which maybe gives us a hint as to what's going on with this hargasha. It's not so clear. But the Gemara says here, right in the middle of the sugya, if you remember, those of you who learned this, remember I jumped here right in the middle, but just to give you a sense, it says, V'yisei mohayon time with the shamai. If you want to say the following is the reason for shamai. Shamai, if you remember, in the Mishnah, was the one that said that if a woman who sees blood, there's a question of dayan shata, that she doesn't have to expect that she doesn't have to say that she was tamei going backwards in time, mostly in terms of taharos, meaning in the times of when people kept tum on tahara. So if she saw blood, she would become tameh not only to her husband, but she would also become tameh that she can't touch certain foods such as truma, which can only be touched when the person is tahor. So Shammai says that that at least in certain in many cases she's that if she sees blood, she doesn't have to assume that truma or taharos that she's touched, you know, 3 hours ago are tameh based on the blood that she sees right now. So again, the Gemara discusses many, many different reasons. If you remember, the Gemara is, you know, back and forth and back and forth for many daffin there. So the Gemara says that maybe the reason why she is tahor is because hol v'isha margeshet b'yatzma, because a woman feels a hargasha. Meaning what? Meaning that at the time that she sees the blood, we can assume that she didn't become tummy until she felt the sensation. Okay, before that time, you can assume that she wasn't tummy because she didn't yet feel the hargasha. Only after the hargasha can we assume that she is tameh. Therefore, taharos that she's touched 3 hours ago would still be taharos. The Hillel, why did Hillel disagree? If you remember, in the Mishnah, Hillel did not agree with that. Hillel says, well, maybe she messed up. He says, "Vura hargashas meraglein hi." If she thinks that maybe the hargasha is not something from her nida period, she feels a sensation, but what she thinks she feels is that she's going to the bathroom. Okay, she can't distinguish between a hargasha for her nida cycle and a hargasha sensation that you have when going to the bathroom. Okay. And the next line, again, not entirely relevant, but I'll just read it anyway. The one says, well, Shammai, Haike Yeshana, Yeshena, sorry. According to Shammai, what about a case where she's sleeping? Maybe in that case, she won't feel the hargasha. So why do we assume that she's tameh only from the time that she sees the blood? And the answer is, Yishena Nami Agav Tzara Misra. When she's sleeping, again, she'll wake up because she's in pain. She'll feel a sensation, she's in pain. Just like when you have to go to the bathroom, you wake up. Meaning, again, at night, this is again, an interesting point, which we're not going to go into now, but if you really, really needed to go to the bathroom at night, you'll probably wake up. So too, says Shammai, for neither period also, for a hargasha, a sensation, if the woman really has a hargasha, and she's having her cycle, she's going to wake up due to the tsar, or the distress from having it. What's the problem with this? Just factually or practically, what's the problem with this? We're not women here, but I think we know the problem. What's the question here? Is this true?
No, I thought it was. I actually put the Gary guy.
Okay.
So it's.
You have to follow up with him to ask me exactly what kind of sensation he's talking about. Let's just discuss the Hilchos Nida part of that. It's too bad he wasn't here. But
Chazal bring down, modern Chazal bring down the modern Chazal.
This one is going.
Over the last 300-400 years,
right.
Brought down that women don't feel the Hargasha anymore. But the reality is that I'm told that also by other OBGYNs that some women do still feel the Hargasha.
Okay, so let me tell you the different opinions in the Rishon about what the Hargasha is. And again, I've also heard that, but the question is, again, I don't remember offhand, maybe somebody else remembers, what type of Hargasha are the OBGYNs talking about? Okay, we'll see here, I'll give you the three that are mentioned in the classical poskim and the one that maybe is not, and have to analyze exactly what it is. And by the way, Yossi, some poskim actually don't say that. Some poskim actually say that that if the women don't feel anything, it's their own problem. They don't know what they're feeling. Okay, they don't know what's going on. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan has a very, very famous line about this that he says they're all messed up. The women don't know what they're talking about. Is he right? I'm not sure, but there are posts that definitely say that just because they don't feel it is just because they don't really know how to feel it anymore. They're not in tune to their internal system. So again, he doesn't say that they do feel it. He says they don't feel it, but maybe they don't know what it feels like anymore. I wasn't planning on it. Well, that's why we have women's shiurim also for. Okay, so very, very briefly, the three types of hargasha that are mentioned in the classical poskim are summarized here in the Pisachei Tshuva, in source number 5. Pisachei Tshuva is in Siman Kuf Pei Gimel in Yoredei Hilchos Nida. So he says here in the second, third word, V'da, the shlosha mina hargashas yesh l'inyan shetei tmiya midoraisa. There are three types of hargashas that a person can become tameh midoraisa. He says, Echad, shizazeh gufa, one that the entire body shakes, because of a Rambam, that's what the Rambam says in Hilchos Yisuri Bia. Okay? Does anybody think that they feel that one? The entire body shakes? I don't think so. Heard it? Don't think so. The only thing I have heard that is, from some women is that perhaps that during the period of giving birth, could be that some women feel something somewhat similar to this concept. Maybe not exactly the same thing, but I have heard that during the period of childbirth, it could be that some people do have some sort of sensation which somewhat parallels this concept here, or the second concept.
Could be things like stomach cramps.
Could be.
If some sort of physical, the flip in hormones can be associated with side effects, which is stomach cramps, which may be parallel.
Could be. Again, that is, it's also possible. My impression was that Nizdazea Gufa was a much more,
strong.
Like not cramps, I would call it like...
More than mild.
Yeah, like a seizure type of thing. Not quite as severe as a seizure, but that's what my impression was. But it's definitely possible. I mean, nobody, I don't think anybody's ruled this out in terms of, associating these with other types of effects. And certainly in terms of vessels, that's obviously a clear parallel, but we're not going to go into that now. Number two, Beis Shenitach Makora, that she actually feels her womb opening. Again, this is an interesting one. This is quoted based on earlier Ashkenazi Rishonim, I think the Chumash Hadeshah and others, that suggest that idea. And it's also a question, do women really feel their uterus opening? So some people will say, yeah, they feel something, they feel something. But to really feel the uterus opening, I think, is a very, very rare type of occurrence. My impression, my understanding is that that's not, even somebody that will say that they feel something, they're not usually feeling the actual uterus opening, with the possible exception of giving birth. That's the one case, which again, I've heard for this also, that could be that people actually do feel some form of something opening during that experience. Again, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, it may not be, but that concept of Nitach Makora could be something along those lines, which again is not usual, I don't think, for most women during the menstrual cycle. And the third one, he says, is in the Shud of the Achronim. This is mentioned in later Achronim, you know, to Behud and others. Kishamar Gesha should davar lach zavi mena bifnin. That when she feels what we call zivas, davar lach, liquid sort of dripping out, oozing out from inside of her. Now, this is not the same thing as somebody who calls zivas davar lach bachutz. Okay, some of the later posts from Rav Moshe and others talk about when you actually feel the blood coming out of your body. Okay, that already some women will say that they feel. And maybe that's what Dr. Greenstein and others meant. I'm not sure. You have to ask them. That definitely some women do feel, that they actually feel the blood coming out of their body. But that's not necessarily, again, this is a debate in the Achronim, it's not necessarily what the Achronim mean here. They clearly say zivas davarlach bifnim. Okay, talking about dripping out from the actual uterus inside of the body before it comes outside of the body. That's the hargasha that's talked about here. The hargasha of coming out of the body, again, is discussed by the later Achronim, and that seems to be that most of the Achronim do not think that hargasha coming out of the body, like onto the skin, is necessarily a hargasha. And even this hargasha, the note of Yehuda here, of zivas davarlach bifnim, inside the body to feel that sensation, is also rejected by many Achronim that say that's not a hargasha. What's the point here? What am I getting at? So the question is today. Sorry. Yeah. Sure.
A lot of times, a person will feel, or a woman will feel after it comes out, they'll feel a sensation after clothing, the underwear, the pants,
right.
Whatever it is wet.
Right. So that's what I meant by hargasha zivarlach bachutz, that you feel it coming on the outside. That's what most poskim seem to think is not included in the hargasha concept. What Nodav Yehuda is talking about here probably is more when you inside the body, when it's coming out of the uterus and coming, you know, before it gets out. So the question is, if it's true, again, maybe debatable, but if it's true that women don't feel any of these things, so what's pshat? Okay, is there need of deraisa today? And this is a very interesting question, which is no get to certain things. The bottom line is that most poskim hold that either she's still in need of deraisa, even if she doesn't feel a hargasha, or maybe it's only a drabbanim, but it doesn't matter. Meaning all the halachas are going to still pretty much remain the same, according to most poskim, even if we say that that without hargasha today, it's only drabbanim. The bottom line is that there's so many different rules, and all the rules are going to be the exact same way that they were otherwise because of the halachos, even if you don't have the actual hargasha. And there are those that say maybe it's still deraisa. Maybe some one suggestion is that, again, what we said before, that women don't really realize that they're having the hargasha, but you know, but it's there. It's definitely a possibility. Even if we can't describe it, they don't feel it. Maybe they're just not attuned to it. Other possibility is that maybe what we call derech re'iyah, that hargasha is not necessarily something which has to actually happen. Hargasha is what we call a siman. It's something which indicates that a woman is having her menstrual cycle. And if it's clear that she's having her menstrual cycle through other means, meaning that, you know, there's blood, there's a significant amount of blood, then maybe you don't need to have the actual hargasha. She's still tamei d'oraisa because it's clear to everybody that she's still in the middle of her period. That's another possible option to this. Again, bottom line, in most situations, this is not going to make a major difference. There may be a few exceptions, which I don't think we have time to get into now. But there are some interesting ideas to think about, and some other cases which, again, I don't want to get into now, but some cases which maybe we'll get into later. Towards the end, when we talk about birth control, I don't remember who's talking about birth control, if it's me or you or Rabbi Weitzman, but some interesting cases of birth control where she doesn't, you know, where the woman may actually see blood every month, but she's not going to see an entire cycle. So how does that fit in with this in terms of needs of the rice? So that's a very, very interesting machlokas achronim, haposkim, which we're not going to get into now. Yeah. Somewhere in the time period of the achronim, somewhere in the time period of the last couple hundred years. But in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, they don't really discuss, you know, this possibility so much. It's really more in the last couple hundred years that, you know, the question has come up that maybe women say that they don't feel. And Rabbi Willig pointed out an interesting point, again, which we're not going to get into in detail right now, but he pointed out that it's clear from the Gemara there's a problem here because most women today don't wake up when they have their period. The Gemara says, that we read in Daf Gimel, it says clearly that, at least according to Shammai, but this point may be agreed to by Hillel as well, that because of her tsar, she's going to wake up. And I don't think any women today tell you that they wake up when they have their period. That's Dr. Greenstein, but I don't think so. So that's a clear question, even if you say, yeah, they feel something, but that point of the Gemara, which is a very solid point, you know, is a big question. You know, is that happening? Probably not. So that's an important point to take into account. Again, when we're dealing with the lungs behind this, again, bottom line, practical halacha, we generally still assume in some form that that she's a need anyway. Well, the Gemara seems to say that because the blood is coming out, it's causing tsar. Okay, it's mitzayer tsar.
She
So
like the pimple, that does not count. Like she already, she woke up because she's dirty, something like that.
Right.
Even today, she wakes up.
It's not necessarily from the Hargasha itself. Right, correct. I think that's true. Maybe she might wake up because you have a feeling that it's, you know, it's dirt, it's wet everywhere, but not necessarily because of the Hargasha itself, which is definitely what the Gemara implies. I just mentioned quickly, and then we'll move on to Ksamim, that there are certain cases where the Gemara assumes that there's a possibility of having a Hargasha, what we call a Safik Hargasha, Dilma Argasha V'la Data. And this definitely does come into account in practical halacha. Two major, major cases here, which the Gemara mentions, which I'll just mention just very, very briefly, which will come up in the practical halacha over the next couple of weeks. And that is, number one, when you do a bedika. Okay, the Gemara says when you do a bedika, okay, when you're checking, you're supposed to move around the bedika cloth to get into all the areas of the opening to make sure that there's no blood. That's what you do a bedika for. Again, bedika is done, obviously, we'll talk about it in future weeks, you know, during the period of Shiva Nikim. But the Gemara assumes that while you're doing a bedika, maybe there was a hargasha at the same time, and she mistook the hargasha for for a feeling that she's just, you know, searching around. That will have implications in a week or two when we discuss bedikos, that if you find blood on a bedika cloth, that blood may be doraisa. Okay, even if we'll see in a minute that if she sees a stain, the stain may be derabanan, but when you actually check that may be doraisa. Okay, if you find blood on a bedika cloth, that may be doraisa. That's going to cause certain stringencies on the bedikos that we'll have to discuss in the next couple of weeks. I'll just mention that point right now. Another point which is very, very important is also if a woman sees blood when she's going to the bathroom. This is also a very important thing, and we'll discuss this also as we go along. If she sees blood while going to the bathroom, again, the Gemara says maybe we have a concern, this is also later on, Daf Zayin and Ches or whatever, maybe we have a concern that she had a hargasha and she mistook the hargasha of the nida hargasha for the hargasha, the sensation of going to the bathroom. And therefore, again, that has a very severe status of seeing blood and going to the bathroom, then maybe that's nida d'oraisa, which again is going to cause certain points, which we'll have to discuss as we go along. We're not getting there now, but just again, just to mention to you those concepts. With certainly those of you who learned Daf Yomi, we'll get to this in a couple of weeks. You'll see those concepts. But again, normally most of the halachas basically stay the same, regardless of whether people see our gushas today or not. Okay. Any questions so far? Are we good so far? Okay. Let's go on to Ksum. Ksum, I think, is the more practical part of tonight's shir. And we'll discuss a lot of the details that have to do with this. First, what in the world is a kesem? Who knows what a kesem is? Okay. So if you look here on source number 6, this is a Mishnah Daf Nun Zayin on the base in Maseches Nida. So the Mishnah says Haroa kesem al basara. Okay? If you see a kesem, a stain, if a woman sees a stain on her body, so the Mishnah says Keneged beis haturfa mitama. If it's the stain is seen opposite the area beis haturfa, which is again the area where the blood comes out from. She's tameh. V'shalokan egav b'shaturah. If it's seen in a different part of the body, tahora, then she's tahor. And the Mishnah continues. We're not going to go into the next line here, but basically, the Mishnah indicates to us two points. Number one, that a stain is something which is going to be tameh. Number two, a stain is not always tameh. It depends on where it's seen. Okay, if it's seen in a place which is likely to have come from the makor, from the uterus to be menstrual blood, so then the halacha is that she's tameh. If it's seen in a different part of the body, then you can assume that maybe the blood came from some other part of the body, or the blood came from some other source, but it's not necessarily need the blood, and she's not necessarily tummy. Okay? If you look at source number 7, the Shulchan Aruch summarizes here the concept of kesem, and then we'll just make sure we understand this properly. Give me one second, then you can ask. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Chachamim gadru al kesem shenimtza beguf al begadel. Chazal, the rabbi, has made a gzeira on a kesem which was seen on her body or on her clothing, she tameya, but she's tummy, vasur lebala afim lo hergisha. She's usher to her husband, even if she didn't have a hargasha. What's going on here? Say again.
Where did they get
begadea from? Oh, so again, I didn't quote you every single gemara. You'll see there are other gemaras. Okay? There are other gemaras. But that gemara, the Mishnah I quoted you is that Bisara. There are other gemaras later that discuss her clothing. But it's clear that her clothing is included as well. The concept here is as follows. Okay? The concept here is that Chazal decided that means Rabbanan, even if there's no hargasha, as we mentioned before, still if a woman sees a stain of blood, okay, either on herself or on some sort of clothing, halacha is midrabanan, she's still tummy, and she has all the same restrictions as a regular nida d'oraisa, and she cannot she can't come close to her husband, she can't have relations with her husband, she's a sura labala, the same, you know, 7-12-day period as a nida d'oraisa. Now, just to get this straight, when is this relevant, meaning when does this become practical? So the cases that this becomes practical are either during Shiva Nikim. Okay, if the woman is in the middle of Shiva Nakim, she's trying to become clean, okay, and hopefully most of you are familiar with this, and she sees a stain. Okay, she wasn't doing a bedikah, she wasn't checking, she saw a stain. Okay, and the stain was nice size, it was red, whatever it was, that's a shaila. Does that stain make her tummy that she's got to start all over again? Okay, so the answer is going to be that it depends, and what it depends on we'll see in just a second. But the point is that she may well be tummy, and she's a stain again that she has to start from square one. That's clearly. Say again. So that's
happened 15 days later.
Right.
Theoretically.
Teisha v'chetzi ma'arvit hayom ha'arv. Ma'arv is going to be 9:05 here, right? What? I'm saying usually I think 9:05 is ma'arv. That's why he walked in there, right? Maybe not. Okay. The case here of a kesem that I'm talking about of a shimon akim is when she's already tummy and she's trying to become tahor. So in that case, she's going to remain tummy if she sees a kesem that is halachically considered to be a problem. Now, it may not always be a problem. We'll get to that in just a second. The second case is what you're talking about. Let's say she's tahor, okay? It's, everything is fine. And then one day, suddenly she sees a big stain of blood, okay?
One day after the mikvah.
Yeah, let's say that happens. Okay, that's not so usual, but it could happen out of the blue. Often will happen if she's taking some sort of birth control. Unfortunately, spotting, as many of you probably know, spotting often takes place when a woman is on birth control. And in that situation, again, depending on the particulars, which we'll get to shortly in a minute or two, the halacha is that she may become tameh based on seeing that stain, even if she didn't have a hargasha and she didn't have a regular menstrual cycle. Okay, if she had a regular menstrual cycle, she's going to be tameh nida anyway. But even if she just has a stain and it's not during the time that she's supposed to have a regular cycle, she did not see a complete flow of blood, so then the halacha is that that she still may become tameh. The details behind that we'll have to get to. Okay, we have to talk about that, but to get through her whole point first. Yeah.
A ketem is a stain on any material, paper, cloth, or flesh,
in
anything?
In theory, yes, but in practice, we'll see in a minute, there are exceptions. Okay, we'll get to that in just a second. Okay. Let's get to the let me do the rules of ksamim first, and then we have to discuss, get back to this case. A really very, very important case. If she sees a large stain during the time period when she's not a nida, we'll have to see how to evaluate that. But first, let's look at the rules of ksamim. Okay? What are the rules of ksamim? So the first concept is, again, a chazal or machmir, that a kesem is tummy, even if there's no hargasha, because either, again, multiple reasons why chazal may have been machmir, but maybe she had hargasha she didn't realize. Maybe she won't. Maybe she won't realize that she'll confuse blood that she saw with hargasha and without hargasha. She'll assume that they're both tahor. Whatever the reason is, there are a lot of reasons given for ksamim, but that's the halacha according to Chazal. However, there are certain limitations on a kesem, and this is very, very important to remember. Okay. So number one, okay, this is not so common, but it is mentioned in the post, and we saw it before. If there's a clear possibility that it came from somewhere else and not from the uterus's menstrual blood, then often we can be lenient and it won't be a problem. Okay? Meaning if a woman sees blood like on her leg or on her garments, but not on her underwear, let's say on her shirt. Okay? So if it's not a normal place to see blood coming from the makor, from the uterus, then there are strong grounds to say what we call talia. You can be tola, you can say, we can assume that blood did not come from the makor and she's not tummy. Okay, that's point number one. Okay, again, it's not so common that happens, but again, it's on the books. It's an important point to remember. And again, if you're not sure if this kind of thing happens, you should ask a shaila, because the rules are a little bit complicated. Okay, there's like 50 sifim in the Shulchan Aruch about this point, that seeing blood when it's not exactly in the right place, if you're not sure where it came from, you probably should ask a shaila, because it's not. Say again? Say again?
If you are sure.
It depends. If you're sure that it didn't come from there, then you can usually be makil. If you're sure that it did come from there, so then you have to be machmir, depending on how you're sure. You have to know how you're sure. But if you're sure in a place where it's included in the rules of Chazal, you should be machmir. But the question is, again, yeah, it's best
like,
to.
So like if a woman sees like a mark of blood on her arm or something, and she doesn't know where it came from, so it could be transferred from like one of the kids scratched themselves or something.
Yeah, no, you for sure can make it on that.
Not really, you don't know.
Yes, you can make it. I mean, that's what tliya is. You can be tola that if it's not in a place which is a very logical place that would be coming from the makor, then you can assume that it wasn't. You can assume that it was. That's part of Chazal's built-in rules that because it's only midrabanan, Chazal said you could be lenient in those kind of situations. Okay, but again, you know, if you're not sure, you should ask a shayla, because the rules are clear, there's just, there are a lot of rules, so I can't go through all of them right now. Okay. In terms of the shear, this is an important point. Okay, what is the shear of a kesen? So the answer is, if you look in the Gemara in source number 8, Daf Nun Chesem Beis, Ad Kama Yitola Amar Avuna Kigris Einatola Pachos Migris Tola. Rav Chis Amar Kigris Tola Yeser Migris Einatola. Okay, there's machlokas here, whether it's less than a gris or a gris or more than a gris, etc., etc. A gris is a kind of bean. Okay, I forgot to give a penny. I forgot I was going to bring one. Yeah, I forgot to bring one. Okay, anybody have a U.S. penny here by any chance? U.S. penny. Sorry, heard a U.S. penny? I was going to bring one. I forgot to show you exactly how big it is. Maybe I'll make sure to bring one next time. You don't have one? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I forgot to bring. Anyway, so we Paskin like the opinion that says that in order to be tummy, a kesem has to be bigger than a gris. Okay, gris is owed. What does that mean? It means if a woman sees a stain, okay, on her garments, and it's very small, okay, the halacha is that she is not tummy. Okay, only if the stain is bigger than a gris is she going to be tummy. Okay, this is not talking about an examination. A bedikah that she does will be tummy regardless of how big it is. Even if it's tiny, if it's a stain which becomes tummy, which is red, which is tummy, then she's tummy. A kesem, again, if she sees a stain on her garments, not when she's doing an examination, the halacha is that if it's bigger than a gris, is she going to be tummy. How big is a gris? So a gris is roughly the size of a U.S. penny, which is roughly 19 millimeters. Okay? Yeah. Yes. They have circles. They have drawings, they have circles. If you've got enough experience, you can figure it out. No. It's the U.S. penny is.
I was always told the dime size.
No, okay. Put it this way. There are different opinions, but at the vast majority of posts from Halacha Lamayis, including Ramosha Feinstein and many others, including here in Eretz Yisrael, many posts can hold that it's about 19 millimeters, circle, which is basically the size of a U.S. penny. Okay. Therefore, Halacha Lamayis, again, if you're asking me, and I think Rav Orlean agrees to this, and I think most of the posts that you would ask would agree to this, that's the size, and if it's that size, then it's tummy. If it's less than that, it's tahor. You should be aware, again, I'll try to bring a penny next time, or else Rav Orlean's a big one. Say again? So that's the question. So because of the penny's circle, so the question is, again, many stains are somewhat circular, but the problem is like this, when stains don't always, it's not like, one size fits all, okay? It could be like this, there's a line like this, it's a triangle, who knows what? So basically, that you need to really ask a Rav if you're not sure, which is many cases that you're not sure. You should ask a Rav if you're not sure. If you're not sure that you're not sure, then you should ask a Rav. You have to have a lot of experience dealing with these things to figure out whether it's really included or not. Basically, what Rabbanim do is they have to measure as best as they can a stain which is not a perfect circle and figure out using, a penny or something else to see whether it fits or not. But you have to, again, take the penny, you put it on top of the shirt, and you feel it around, you put part here, and you move it over here and see if that part fits. It's tricky, and you have to get some experience doing it. It's really, could I
take it? You're able to gauge it also.
Correct. With experience, you're able to gauge it. The truth is that most of the time, most stains are, put it this way, a penny is bigger than you would think. Okay? We think a penny is small. It's actually bigger than you would think. Many, many stains are actually less than a penny. And number two, many stains that may be bigger than a penny may not have enough reddish in the stain to make a tummy. These points are the reasons why you should tell your wives to always ask a shayla whenever you're dealing with ksamim, whenever she sees a stain on a garment that she's not sure. So the initial reaction, this already gets into the last part about asking shaylas to the rav, but it's relevant here, so I'll mention it now. Many, many women, and I've heard this from my wife and many others, that women don't realize. You say, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I saw a kesem, it's my fourth day of Shiva Nakim. I see a big, large stain here, okay? And it's tummy, we got to start again, that's it. Don't do that. Absolutely don't do that. It's too risky, and it's too dangerous. You're losing out on too much. The best thing to do, save it, put it in a plastic bag, okay? Bring it to the Rav as fast as you can. Doesn't have to be that second, but within a day, really, ideally within a day, should be brought to the Rav, and have him, or if your wife is showing it to somebody, a woman type person that has experience with these things, not so many of those, but my wife is one of the ones that has some experience. Whoever it is, make sure that they see it, and then you can decide, or they could decide, whether either it's not big enough to be a problem, or there's not enough reddish in the stain to be a problem. But again, it's not something to just automatically decide on your own, or for your wives to decide on their own that it's a problem. Okay, and this is a real issue that people are too machmir sometimes, but really there's a lot of room to be more makil. Okay, if nothing else comes out of this year other than this tonight, that's a very, very important point, which should be really, really remembered. And again, my wife and the other representatives, I think, that are teaching the women's courses will make sure to mention that point as well. But if your wives don't plan on coming to those, make sure to tell them. Okay, always ask a shiloh anytime that you're not sure. Even if you are sure, you think it's a problem, ask a shiloh anyway, because it's not always a problem. Okay, that's in terms of a gris. Let's move on a couple more points, and then I'll take some questions if there are any more questions. Another point, important point in terms of the rules of ksamim, is in terms of mikabel tuma. Okay, and this is in the Gemara as well. You see the Gemara in source number 9, so Rabbi Nechemiah says, this is how we paskin, kol davar she'eno mikabel tuma, eino mikabel ksamim. Anything which is not mikabel tuma, meaning if you find a stain on a surface which is not mikabel tuma, then the halacha is eino mikabel ksamim, then it's not halachically problematic as a kesem. A kesem, according to the rabbis, was only instituted to be a problem on a surface which is mikabel tuma. What is that? So, second?
No, so that's why toilet paper...
Oh, good, so I'll get to that in just a second. Very good. Okay, hold on. So we'll get to that in just a second. So here, most things, when we talk about something which is mikabel tuma, most things that are mikabel tuma that we're talking about are regular clothing. Okay, regular clothing in general is mikabel tuma. However, there are some very important points to things that are not mikabel tuma that, according to many poskim, would not be a problem if you saw a stain on that type of surface. Okay? A couple examples. The biggest example is what Yossi said, is toilet paper. Okay? There's a discussion in the Achronim about paper, whether paper is considered to be mikabel tuma or not. Now, again, mikabel tuma, you have to look at Mishnayos and Kalim. It's not so simple to figure this out. But many, many poskim say that regular paper is not mikabel tuma. It's not one of the types of surfaces that Chazal listed that were, that were regular types of materials that were mikabel tuma, and therefore many poskim hold that it's not mikabel tuma. In terms of toilet paper, even Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this, and this is in source number 11. Before I read the tshuva, do you have a question, somebody? Somebody raise their hand. What a question. Somebody just raise their hand. Yeah, fine. Right, but by the 15th or 16th century or so, they had paper. The truth is, even in times of war, they had some sort. They had papyrus or whatever. They had stuff. They had stuff. Papyrus, sorry, not papyrus. Papyrus. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they had that. They had other kinds of paper as well, parchment and stuff like that. They definitely had stuff.
And that might even be different. I mean, you see in some of the discussions, I remember, from Rishonim versus Achronim, that where some of the Rishonim might be more machmir, it could be referring to that papyrus.
Right, right. So that's what Rav Moshe points out here in source number 11, in Igros Moshe, Chilak Gimel, Sumun Gimel, Nyordea. We're not going to get every point here, we'll just get part of the point. He says, well, etzem inyan kesem v'dimtzar al niyar. He says, what about a kesem which is found on paper? And here, when he says paper, he means toilet paper. Okay, this is one of the most common cases that you'll find that you've either heard about or experienced. Is let's say that a woman is going to the bathroom, she wipes with toilet paper, and she finds blood on the toilet paper. Now what? Is she tame? Does she have to start counting again if she's in the middle of Shiva Nakiyam? So Rav Moshe points out a pligi achronim. He says the achronim debate the question of paper. But he says, he says he thinks that the appropriate opinion is like the Noda Bihuda, that paper is mekabel tuma. Okay? But he says, aval b'niyar shalanu, but our paper, which basically means toilet paper, shudak v'lo shach l'chabson, which is very thin, and you can't really wash it. She had royally shtamish buddha, you can't reuse it again after it's been used for toilet paper. As it is when it's dirty with stains and you're wiping, whatever it is, vade ana roy. Okay? Nivatal zahanir. Okay, certainly this type of paper is not appropriate or usable for anything else afterwards, and therefore it's something which is hukakarua umushchas, it's torn, it's destroyed, mishum tashmash lagamri, can't be usable. Vade anashum kabal tuma. One of the concepts of mikabel tuma is that it's got to be usable. It has to have a function. And once you use toilet paper once, it doesn't have a function anymore. It's not really usable in a normal...
Is it the usable or the thickness? A wipe.
He's mentioning both.
Wipes are thick, but they're not usable afterwards.
Right. So most poskim, this is an interesting question. Somebody just asked about this recently. I forgot how this came up. But somebody asked about... Say again?
Now that you want to know how it came up...
I don't know how it came up. I don't think the question came from somebody in Yad B'Yamin, but my wife had a question from somebody about blood on a wipe. So the bottom line is that probably blood on a wipe is also not mikabel tuma because a wipe is also not considered to be either it's not woven in a normal way like a normal beged. I had to do some research online to figure this out. But apparently baby wipes are not actually woven together. It's like unwoven strands or whatever it is. Plus the fact that it's also not usable after you wipe anymore. So therefore, I think we assumed and I think it's Dr. Roiland, but also he agreed that wipes would not be mikabel tuma. But again, most cases that's not practical. Okay, that's except for this one random shiloh. Usually that's not something which comes up regularly. So according to Rav Moshe, he says that toilet paper is not makabel tuma, and therefore, this is what most poskim paskin, though not all, but most poskim paskin, that if you see blood on toilet paper, that it's not makabel tuma, and therefore is not a problem. Okay, but there's one point I have to add in just a second. But the basic point is that you, she would not be tummy, because she doesn't have to worry if she sees toilet paper on, if she sees blood on toilet paper.
So why does it have to toilet
paper? Say again? Depends what you ask. So there are some poskim that disagree and feel that toilet paper may be makabel tuma, or there's another problem, which I'll get to in a second, which basically, based on that, some poskim say that if you want to be machmir to avoid the problem completely, they say maybe it's better to use colored toilet paper because of the colored issue, which we'll get to in just a second, that colored things also are not going to be a problem of need. We'll get to that in a minute. The other problem with the toilet paper is a different issue, which is based on what I said before. When do people usually use toilet paper? Right after they do what? Go to the bathroom. What did we say before about going to the bathroom? That maybe if there's blood that comes out when she's going to the bathroom, maybe she's having a hargasha, d'oraisa, said she didn't realize it. What's the problem? Say again. So that's the point. What's the problem? So the problem is, once you're dealing with a possible hargasha d'oraisa, then the leniencies of ksamim, of the rabbi's leniencies of stains, don't apply anymore. You got to be more machmir. So even if you say, yes, on toilet paper, it's not a problem because it's not makabel tuma, if there's a suffix hargasha because she just went to the bathroom, then already you maybe have to be machmir. So that's another reason why some poskim are more machmir in that toilet paper, and that's why many of the books, including Rabbi Forst and the Arsch book and many others, say if she sees blood on toilet paper, she should ask a shiloh. Okay, very nice. Ask a shiloh. Okay, ask a shiloh. Say again? The color one might be better because of the fact that it's on color, which we'll see in a minute. Yeah, exactly.
You're saying you don't think it's
on the paper as well. So Anias Dati and most of the poskim that we speak to on a regular basis, most of those poskim hold that toilet paper is not a problem. Okay, what do they explain? So they basically explain that the whole concept of suffix hargasha, that maybe she had went to the bathroom and had blood at the same time, is only if you did it immediately after after going to the bathroom. So what the poskim recommend is they say she should wait a few seconds before wiping, just to make sure that there's no overlap of possible hargasha and possible going to the bathroom at the same time that would mix the sensations. So they mention maybe wait 30 seconds before wiping, even 10 seconds. Many of the postmen in YU say you really don't need to wait at all, but it's a nice thing to wait, but really, unless it was like exactly at that second, meaning exactly at the second that she was still going to the bathroom, you wiped, which is not practical anyway. Other than that, you could be makil anyway. So, bottom line, and if you ask me, and I think Rick Orlean is the same school of thought, you can check with him, but I think he would agree with this, that many postmen would say that ideally it's good for a woman to wait, 10 to 15 seconds at least before wiping, maybe a little bit more. But if she didn't, then she's still tolerant, because she doesn't have to worry about it, and it's fine. However, if you followed a different psak that was more machmir, so again, I'm not saying that psak is wrong, it's just different. That's not the psak that I would give, so again, you can choose to continue following that more machmir psak, or if you want to re-ask the question, you can come speak to one of the rabbonim and see if they want to, if they're willing to change your psak for you, which maybe they won't, but if you want to try, you're more than welcome to try. Okay. That's the story in terms of makabel tuma. There are a few other points also, which we're not going to have time to really go into in detail. But many people know that pads are also not makabel tuma. Okay, now pads is a big shiloh to begin with, whether you should use pads. Because what you can do with a pad is that on a pad, you can have a lot of blood. And yet if a pad is not makabel tuma, you could say she saw a ton of blood. Maybe she has her real cycle and she's not tummy. So that already, we don't usually do. Okay, meaning to use a pad and say during a real actual cycle, to use a pad and say she's not tummy, she's not in either, that we don't usually do. However, when we sometimes would do that, say again. Maybe she would never be tummy in the first place in that case. So that we don't usually say. What we sometimes say is that if she needs to wear a pad during Shiva Nikiyam because she's having problems becoming clean, so then I already, this is when the shiloh gets sticky, and this again I can just give you a Mara Mukum now, but every shiloh has to be asked on its own on this point. But unfortunately, when women are spotting or they have problems, whatever it is, they can't get clean, so they have to figure out why that is. But in addition to that, a Rav may sometimes, in extreme situations, may tell her she can wear a white pad, and as long as she's wearing white during the Shiva Nikiyam, which we'll discuss in a different week, maybe the pad, which is not makabel tuma, is not going to be a problem for her, and she can become clean even if she's still seeing blood. Now, again, that's not a psak you can give on your own. Okay, that's a psak that needs to be given by a Rav, and he has to evaluate the situation appropriately. But again, I'm just giving you an idea, just throw it out there so you're aware of that possibility, that this is one of the options that's sometimes suggested by Rabbanim to do that. To get clean. Again, there are many other pieces of summon that are questions of makabel tuma or not. Just a few other things here. We're not going to go into this now. We're going to see the case here. Nylon is a question. flat. There's all sorts of kinds of things here. Cotton is a question. Generally, a wad of cotton that she saw, you know, is not going to be a problem if not usually in kabbal tuma. Small piece of cloth might be not a kabbal tuma if it's too small, etc., etc. Again, a bedika cloth doesn't count because a bedika cloth, you're doing an examination. That's already a savik hargasha. Okay, let's quickly do one more point in terms of ksamim. That is in terms of colors. Okay, what is there with colors? So this is an important point. So here you see in source number 10, there's a machlokas tanaim and daf samach alaf and nida beged savu matamishim kesem. Rabbi Nassan Omer, Eino Tamishim Kesem, Shal Tikno Bigadet Sivonim, Leisha Ela Lahaki Al Kisman. Okay? Machlokas Tanaim, if it is a colored garment, going to become Tamim because of a Kesem. So we paskin that it's not. Okay? The Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's not Tamim Mishim Kesem, meaning that if a woman is wearing colored clothing, so then she's not going to become Tamim. This, of course, is what we do during the time period when a woman is not a Nida. She should always wear colored undergarments. So that we should make sure that if there's a stain by some chance or she spots for some reason, if it's uncolored, then there's no problem. Okay, why is that? Because you can't necessarily always evaluate whether it's reddish or not. If it's seen on, let's say, a purple or a black or a dark color, you can't tell what color the blood is. And therefore, it's not going to be tummy. Okay, that's how we pass. And again, this is important to remind people of this. People don't always remember, and then you run into problems. Again, we've had shilas before where people come and, you know, they saw a kesem, they saw a stain on a white undergarment, and we ask what were the details of the case, and it turns out she had just gone to the mikvah a week and a half ago, but she was spotting for whatever reason, and now she has a big stain on a white undergarment. So we have to figure out, maybe it's tahor, maybe it's okay, but the point is to be reminded of the fact that really during the time frame when you're not tameh, you shouldn't be wearing white undergarments anyway. You should be wearing colored. Now again, it's not always so easy to do, whatever practical reasons, but the bottom line is it'll save a ton of problems and headaches if you wear colored garments during the time frame when you're not tummy. Okay, during Shiva Nakim, you're not supposed to do that. During Shiva Nakim, most of the time you're supposed to wear white garments. That we'll learn about in a couple of weeks. But again, in extreme situations, Rabbanim, if pushed, because of the situation, Rabbanim may sometimes allow colored garments during the Shiva Nakim as well. So that's something to be aware of. What's considered to be a colored garment? So again, this is a question. Most poskim hold that anything which is some sort of color is included in a colored garment. Off-white is probably not included. Okay, off-white is probably, according to most posts, the same thing as white. A very, very, very light peach color also has a bit of a machlokas, what the story is with that. But most other colors that are not white, reddish or brown or green or blue or who knows what, most other colors, even if they're lightish colors, okay, even if they're relatively light colors, but they're not very, very close to white, most posts can hold that those are not included in colored garments. Okay, we're going to have to finish up here, but just I'll throw out one point for now, and this is a serious shiloh, which maybe we'll have to come back to. Either Rav Orlin will discuss next week, or I'll discuss the week after that. And that is the following scenario. This is so common, and it's really a very difficult shiloh to deal with. Okay, what happens if you have a case where a woman is, she's tahor, she's not in the middle of her nida period, and because either she's on birth control of some sort, or whatever, she has a diaphragm, IUD, whatever the case may be, pill, and whatever other reason comes up, and she sees a stain, and she starts seeing a big stain, and then the next day she sees another big stain. She sees a lot of blood, but she's wearing colored garments. She's wearing colored, so it should be tahor. But yet she's seeing a lot of blood. At what point do we say that we've crossed the border between a kesem, a rabbinic injunction of a stain, which is tahor if it's seen on colored garments, and nida daraisa, when she's basically seeing ki'ilu, a flow of blood, which would make her tummy the right, so she's a real nida. The rules here are not so clear. And again, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this case, but this really, unfortunately, happens very, very frequently. And any case where this happens, you should ask the shaila. Okay. If you ask me, okay, and this also Machon Pua agrees with this is the psak point to many, many poskim, is that there's no limit, okay, with a limit. I mean, there's no limit, but there is a limit. In the Chazal here, in the Makoros, you don't see a limit that if she sees three grises of blood, or two grises of blood, or four grises of blood, it doesn't say, well, she sees a lot of blood, even if it's uncolored, then she's still tummy. It sounds like she's still tummy regardless of how much she sees uncolored. However, there has to be some sort of boundary, because when she sees her regular cycle, it's going to be uncolored garments. And of course, she's tummy if she sees her regular period. So most poskim say the following. Okay, most poskim say the best thing to do is if she sees just a gris of blood, again, about the size of a penny, maybe a little bit more, she's still tummy. But at that point, once she sees blood, they should abstain from having relations for at least 24 hours. Why? Because we're not sure what's going on. Okay, we don't know what's happening in the cycle. Is she about to see her period? Maybe there's something else going on. It's highly recommended by many poskim, to wait at least 24 hours after you see a stain. Certainly if it's bigger than a grist, some say even less than a grist, but certainly if it's bigger than a grist, to abstain for 24 hours and wait and see what happens.
So not the dinei hachakos.
Say again?
The dinei hachakos.
Correct. Not dinei, this is not hachakos, this is nothing, this is not in the halacha. Okay, this is like a made-up invention to wait 24 hours. But it's mentioned, you know, Rav Avadya Yosef talks about it, Rav Vazman, the lady talks about it, Rav Willig discusses this. No, 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 not at all. No. Don't do anything different. Nothing different. Just abstain from having marital relations for at least 24 hours. Why? As a precaution. It's, again, it's not in the Makoros. This is a precautionary measure just to see what's happening. Now, if the same thing happens for, you know, 3 or 4 days that she keeps seeing, you know, stains of blood, again, she should ask the Shiloh. Many Rabbanim will tell you that it's okay. After a couple of days, if she hasn't seen a full period, then she can continue having relations normally. Ah, so again, that we'll have to discuss when we talk about Vesas. But correct, if it's the time period of her period, then maybe we have Vesas restrictions. But then in that case, certainly she should abstain. But if after having one stain, then she doesn't see anything else the next day, then if it's not her Vesas period anymore, it's the day after, maybe she can continue and, you know, they can continue normally. Okay, that again, we'll get to when we talk about Vesas.
What happens if the reality was that she had a minor period with such little amount of blood?
Oh, so that's a great question, which we don't have time to get into now. Maybe when we talk about birth control, we'll get to it.
That also happens a lot.
Okay, so most of the time, most women know the amount of blood that it takes to have a regular period. Okay, Ray Willig always says this. He says, women know. You just ask them. They know when they had a real period. Unfortunately, you know, we still hear Shilohs when the woman calls, you know, either my wife or whatever, and she asks her, well, I saw this amount of blood, and I'm not sure. Well, is it your regular period? Not exactly, but sort of, you know. I'm like, well, come on. Is that how much you have or not? But, you know, it's a Shiloh. Okay, this is a real question.
The reason I'm asking is that there are women that have a very slight period, and then for maybe 2 cycles, and then heavy periods for the 3rd and 4th,
mm-hmm.
and then slight periods for the 5th and 6th,
right.
and then heavy periods
right.
for the
right.
7th and 8th.
Right.
So if that is a normal process, that you know that you have two heavy cycles,
right.
light cycles,
right. Right.
Then any amount of blood during the point of during the Vesas period should put the woman into Nidah.
I wouldn't say any amount of blood. Whatever was considered to be for her a regular amount of blood to feel that that's her period. It's not usually a small amount. It would be a little bit bigger than, you know, you have to ask, but whatever amount of blood she would feel to be considered to be her regular amount of blood for that cycle, that would be the amount that we would say that she's tummy as a nida, even if she's wearing colored garments.
And what happens retroactively if she had a during the period of time that she's supposed to be from nida, that she has a very slight amount of blood, and that's it. And for days and days and days afterwards, nothing happens. And the whole month goes by,
right.
and it, all of a sudden you realize that the nida that she was supposed to have was really that small amount of blood.
Right.
So do we right. ask
right.
that she's
good,
a nida?
Good question. Many poskim would say that if that's not her usual amount of blood, then she was not a nida at all. And you would treat her not as not being
nida.
Correct.
Right.
However, there are some forms of birth control today which they're, you know, majorly discussed in the poskim that actually cause effects such as the one that you're describing.
Right.
There's one kind called Mirena and a few others that are like it, that basically, you know, Kilo reduced the period to be a very small amount of blood while she's on that type of pill. In that situation, that already is a big machlokas of poskim that many poskim say. Some poskim say that it's not a problem and that she's not a nida, just like I said before. And other poskim say, well, no, if that pill is making it to be that this would be her regular amount of blood for the cycle based on being on the pill, then that's considered to be her derech ra'iyah. That's considered to be her menstrual cycle for the month, and she would be a nida d'oraisa 100%. Rabbi Willig happens to be one of those poskim that is machmir on that point. Rabbi Yashiv also maybe wasn't clear. He said a few different things, but very, very possible. That's a big machlokas of poskim. That again needs to be asked as a shaila in an actual situation rather than just giving, you know, general rules. So basically, to summarize here, just on this last point of this case, again, abstaining for 24 hours when you see a large stain, is definitely in order. Again, every case where this happens, you know, if it's more than that in terms of the amount of blood, should be asked as a shiloh. Okay, you shouldn't assume that she's tummy. You shouldn't assume that she's not tummy. Again, many of these cases happen when you're on IUD or other kinds of birth control that need to be, you know, analyzed on a case by case basis. So it's hard to give absolute rules. But again, that's the normal rule. But again, other posim machon pua has their way of saying if it's more than the amount of blood on, like on a credit card or whatever, then maybe she's tummy. So you need to ask your posek on what he feels in any of these cases. But again, the point here is not to tell you the bottom line completely. The point is to recognize when you need to ask a shayla and ask the shayla in the appropriate way. Okay, what we didn't get to tonight, we just didn't finish up about asking things to know how to ask a shayla to a rav or to somebody else. I guess that we'll try to finish up next week or the week afterwards. But are there any questions or anything else that we said tonight? Okay, see you. I think mine didn't record.
You did.
So I didn't understand. So. Do you